Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parent in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice, and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because, let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing. Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
And do you remember the other name? Josh Widdicombe.
Josh Widdicombe.
Good job.
Sounds like a television
booker. Good job. Yeah, that was. Hi, Rob and Josh.
Hi.
This is my 26-month-old.
What's that mean?
Two and a bit. Caleb, who hasn't stopped saying your names now that I've asked him to. Well, he did stop saying mine. He was born at the beginning of the pandemic, so those first few months were very tough.
Oh, COVID Caleb.
Thank you for sharing all the parenting stories and causing lots of laughs out loud moments in our house. Also, big shout out to Lou.
Oh, yeah.
As I'm also enjoying following her on Instagram. Yes, that's right, Lou. You are an influencer. Keep up the good work, boys, and hopefully we'll get to see you when we can come to Cardiff. Rosie, 30-ish, Brecon, Mid Wales.
There are a few little... the live tour is next April.
Next April.
I think, yeah, next April. And there's also some smaller venues on sale soon or already sale. We're doing like Portsmouth.
Warm-up ones, right?
Warm-up, yes.
It won't be as good.
No, but they're the work-in-progress ones. Yeah. So they make sure that when we hit the arenas, we're on fire. Yeah. So we're doing Portsmouth, I think Canterbury, Hexham, at Northallerton, Barnard Castle.
Barnard Castle. We'll have a bit of a laugh with that.
Glasses. Have we got the glasses?
I bet you guys haven't heard this before.
You little Barnard bastards. Here we go. And a few other places, I don't know.
Do you know what? What I'd like is, imagine what one of those tickets would look like as a bookmark in our own book as a Christmas present. That's a good Christmas.
You dirty bastard. I was like, what's he doing there?
Couple of bookmarks, maybe four bookmarks in a book.
And then some headphones that are attached to the audio book.
Ah, exactly, Rob.
Or not. Right, should we do some... We've not done correspondence.
No, we don't do enough. We just take from our listeners. We don't give.
Let's take their content now.
Let's take their content and farm it
back to them. It's good content.
Sell them themselves back.
What have you done there?
I went to put my feet up because I look forward to the correspondence. Okay. And it made more noise than I thought.
Here we go. Okay. A story on the topic, things your parents were called into school for.
Yeah.
When me and my sister were in primary school, one day we were all made to come inside from the playground, but we didn't know why. Then the police arrived and a helicopter started circling above. My mum received a call from the school to say my sister, who I think was in year one at the time, had told a teacher she had seen a man in the bushes with a gun.
Oh, my word.
A school playground ran alongside a dodgy alley where your standard 1990s glue sniffers and flashers... Flashing in the alley?
You're not going to get much... footfall there, are you?
She's written this like it's a... Oh, the glory days.
The glory
just
days.
Just a glue sniffer and a flasher.
Bit of copy decks and down the alley, get my knob out.
Where they frequently hung out, so a gunman wasn't a totally wild claim. Of course she hadn't seen a gunman at all and made it up.
Oh, my God.
Also, they said, when she was in reception, she hung a boy from the school sundial with one of those fabric PE bands that you wore over your shoulder. Remember them?
What?
You wear like a little sash to be a colour in sports day.
Oh, yeah.
It's like a fat man's belt over your shoulder.
Yeah, of course.
So she hung a guy. That sister sounds dangerous. Yeah. Hi, Rob and Josh. I wanted to share a story about what happened a few years ago when my daughter was about 18 months year old. Did that on purpose.
Oh,
that
nice,
time.
nice.
18 nice. Months old. 18 yeah. months. Because I keep saying the year. She was feeling a little ill one evening, but her temperature wasn't too bad, so we thought a good night's sleep would sort her out and in the morning she would be fine. About 2 a.m, my daughter starts to cry and cough. Knowing that a cough was usually a precursor to my daughter vomiting, my wife sprang out of bed, picked her up and took her down to the kitchen. The kitchen is the only floor in the house with laminate flooring, thus making the potential clear-up much easier. That's so depressing.
That really good.
Just running with a child near something white clean.
Oh, my God.
Anyway... Suddenly it happened. My daughter erupted from her mouth and nose. Nice. My wife was holding her over her shoulder, so the enormous spew fell mostly on the kitchen floor with my wife's hair, shoulder and back collateral damage. That's horrible, isn't it?
Yeah.
This is the thing, this is just happening every night in households across the country, yeah. Just a child being sick. My dog suddenly arose from his slumber.
Oh, no. Oh, no. I know where this is going.
Knowing that when the small human drops something on the floor, it usually equals food.
Oh, God.
He rushed over in an anticipation of a late night slack. In his enthusiasm, he sprinted into the lumpy puddle on the floor.
Oh, my God.
Much bigger than he anticipated.
Oh, God.
His excitement was too much. He had all four paws in the previous evening's partially digested mush. All four paws gave way, legs akimbo, meaning the dog's underside was covered from chin to tail in chunder.
Oh, my God.
From chin to tail in chunder.
That's beautiful.
Also, forget dogs have chins.
Well, they don't really. They're quite, like, chinless, though.
It's a jaw.
Yeah.
But is it a chinny?
I suppose.
Yeah, dog's got chins, mate.
Yeah, you haven't seen a dog with a big chin, though,
I've touched around there. Yeah, that was a bit weird, wasn't it?
Yeah. I said nice, you said weird.
That was like your first date with Rose. A bit weird, actually, I think that, Josh. I liked it, Rose. My daughter's still crying from her first explosion, then decided it was time for round two.
Oh, no, not on top of the dog. No.
My wife hadn't moved too much in the few seconds it took for my dog to belly flop into the puddle. Round two landed squarely on top of my dog.
Oh, my God. Oh, God, it's a spew sandwich.
Meaning he was pretty much a furry, vomity ball of fluff.
Oh, my God.
A shower for my wife, a bath for the dog, and a shit ton of kitchen roll for me to clear up the mess which were required at 2 a.m. My daughter, clearly some sort of evil genius, managed to escape the events of the evening without getting anything on her, so I went to sleep.
That's incredible.
In the same PJs. 18 months.
Same PJs?
Well, because she just out of the mouth. Oh, dear. Wow. Keep up the good work, Pete. Lovely email, that, Pete.
Great work, Pete.
Do you want another one?
Yeah.
Here we go. Hi, gents. I was listening to your Mining Class episode where somebody said they listened to you during labour, and I can confirm you're also part of my birth story for our second child. In true second time mum fashion, my labour progressed quickly and we left the journey to the hospital a little later than we should have. My husband and I are big fans of your podcast, so I can understand why you thought planning one of the episodes on the drive to the hospital would be a good idea whilst I did my best to breathe through the contractions and generally stay in the zone.
Sadly, it was beep that name out, but keep it in, Michael. I think that should be running.
The thing is, he resumed one where we had previously left off, and it started with you both laughing quite a lot with the occasional, frequent swear word thrown in. No offence, lads, but in that moment, without any context of what you were laughing at, it threw me off a little, and it just felt like I was being heckled. Huh? I knew this was my husband's attempt to help me in a thoughtful way, so I did my best to continue my focused breathing, but it was difficult as you both shouted, fuck off, fuck off, fuck off, for no reason whatsoever, it seemed to be at the time. Now we have a newborn, Nell, and a three-year-old, Layla, and can't wait to get to the magical ages of 1 and 4 that Josh makes sound so fun.
Oh, God.
Rachel Milton Keynes, we're part of their birth story.
I think that's interesting that that's my first voices. That maybe a baby is, could be ours.
Yeah, that'd be a terrible thing to come into the world. Me and you just moaning about a week.
What did you listen to? Did Lou have a birthday?
No, it's very traumatic. You can read about it in the book.
Yeah.
I'm not going to get bogged down by that now.
Okay. Well, should we bring on the guest then?
Yes. Rachel Paris. Rachel Paris, welcome to the show.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. Yeah.
Good.
For a show called Parenting Hell, I am child-free today.
Oh.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say completely. I was going to go, this is going to be a long interview.
Yeah, we've put the child up for adoption, actually. It's really quite a lot of hassle, we found out.
We just changed our minds. We were just tired in the mornings, so it just was not worth it.
And we're not tired now. So it actually worked out really well.
Still got the photos. Rachel, how old is your baby?
He is 14 months, 15 months.
Is that still a baby? Is that a toddler?
Well, he's walking now, I think officially it's a toddler.
Yes.
Officially a toddler.
But I think it's perfectly normal that I still try and hold him horizontally and sway him and sing to him a song that goes, you're still my baby, you're still my baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's normal, isn't it?
I think that's absolutely fine, not problematic at all.
I think once he's talking, maybe you need to knock that on the head. But
My mum still does that with my youngest brother. He's 34. And Rachel, for people that don't know, you're married to Marcus Brigstocke, a comedian that we all know as well.
That's correct. And just to clarify, our baby is with him, not yes. just yes. away. Yes.
Yeah, so that's your baby together. And he's got children from a previous relationship. So are you stepmum? Is that a thing?
I am, yeah. I'm stepmum to two teenagers. Well, I say teenagers. One of them's 20. So the other one's about to turn 18.
So let's start with the baby first. But how do you...
The toddler, sorry.
My baby.
Well, exactly. I mean, how involved are you, I suppose, as the stepmum role? Because it's sort of a weird sort of thing to be when they're so old now.
Yeah, well, so I came into their lives when they were 13 and 15.
Oh, perfect age. I bet they love that. I bet you love that. Just staring at each other, all awkward.
Yeah, I'm sure they were absolutely over the moon. Do you know what? Like, they were really good. I think it was hard for them and hard for all of us, because blended families are hard. Yeah. But actually, you know, you read about teenage kids and especially stepkids who have every reason to act out, actually. And, you know, they've just been pretty amazing, to be honest. And I mean, it's different because I was never able to truly mother them, if you know what I mean. Yeah. You know, yeah. They've got a fantastic mum and... That was never my job.
You came in early doors, put in some really harsh rules, showed them who's
boss. Yeah, exactly.
Things are going to change around here.
It's a new set of rules. Welcome to Paris Town.
But I think they get a bit of a bad rep, teenagers. I don't feel like they're as bad as what everyone's anxiety tells you they're going to be, because I think that's the big worry, isn't it? Everyone's goes, oh, you wait till they're teenagers. But I think a lot of teenagers are just quite quiet and polite.
100%. Like, I think the one thing with teenagers is, no matter how kind of socially aware and politically interested they are and all that kind of thing, I think teenagers are quite inward looking. And yeah. I think that is that from that comes a lot of the things that people moan about, which is being sort of tormented souls. Hence both of my stepkids did GCSE drama. And their drama pieces and all of their friends throughout the school's drama pieces were about, you know, murder, suicide, like huge topics for 15-year-olds.
Yeah, it's changed a lot since I was a teenager. I mean, Panini sticker albums and breasts.
Do you want to know what my the main GCSE things. Drama...
What was that?
GCSE drama piece was... Set in a, I was a blinded soldier in a World War One hospital.
Really?
And then we came up with this ourselves. And the guy next to me would tell me stories about this woman that walked past the window.
Where's this going, Josh?
I'm just telling you what my GCSE drama piece was.
At the moment, you've spoken more about this than Rachel's spoken about her kid.
No, I need more context. Was this? Did you write this? Was it devised or?
Well, yes. Josh, tell us about your drama GCSE.
Well, we wrote it as a group, but it was mainly written by Harry Long, who went on to have a small part in Doc Martin.
All right.
Yeah. So anyway, I was blinded, and there was a woman that walked past the window that the other soldier would tell me about, and she was kind of my hope, you know. My fantasy woman. And then at the end, the other soldier died. A new soldier goes into the bed, and I ask him whether the woman's walking past the window, and he says, "There is no window."
Oh, wow, that's
hairs
good.
On the back seat.
Yeah.
Oh my god! I thought you were going to say there's no woman.
No, there's no window.
That's even deeper.
I think the line was it's a brick wall.
Oh right, that's not as gentle.
No, not as good actually.
I think you've got better delivery now.
Yeah. It's a lot to do with the structural integrity of the building than I thought.
Yeah. Now I just feel like, why are we putting wounded soldiers in rooms with no windows?
It doesn't need a window.
Oh, he is blind. Yes.
Yeah, but a bit of breeze.
Oh, I hear what you're saying, Josh. Blind people don't need windows anymore. No. You've made that very clear.
Lock them up.
Oh, God. Let's go back to your toddler baby.
You talk about your stepkids' drama clerk. They're there.
Oh, yeah. So I just think that there's a weird mixture, which is this generation, to be fair, have had to put up with a hell of a lot already. You know, they've been brought up in a big recession. They've had COVID, NHS not at all equipped to cope with their mental health struggles. So I do feel...
And they have to have social media.
Yeah, social media.
Oh, so, and bullying online. And,
And some of them haven't got pubes yet. And that's really going to be getting in their head.
The
old pubes.
Are you going back to your teenage
years? I was desperate for pubes, but that's another story, Rachel. I've been shaving my armpits, but that's separate.
Have you?
Yeah.
What are you doing? Swimming?
What am I doing? No, I just don't like having airy armpits.
Adam Peaty? What's...
Well, no, I just think, why do I need long airy bits out my arms? It's getting all sweaty and horrible. I might as well keep them short.
How long is it?
Well, I'd say when they're unleashed, you're looking at 3 to 4 inches of armpit.
That is very long.
It is, and they're all blonde, so it looks like I've got a tiny woman in my arm, and it's just their hair coming out. Sorry. So you're what?
I just, my favourite bit of the interview is the shock in Rachel's voice when she's like, how long is it?
I think that, well, I was about to dig in deep about pubic hair, but I think there's a happy medium, isn't there? Well, you want to, I think it should be gender neutral, that you just keep it trim.
Yeah, like the thing is, I think you don't want it completely bald because a man's penis looks like a mole rat. So what you want is just a nice splattering of pubic hair, but not a big bush that's overwhelming for everyone involved.
There we go.
And I will not be moved on that.
You know, and women's bits don't look like a mole rat, but I sort of think you still want to look like a human, don't you?
Yeah. So what was their drama pieces?
This is the most digressing we've ever done in my life. I love it. But navigating. I just can't be clear enough. There wasn't a window. Picture that, Rob.
There was no window in this war veterans hospital.
I'm absolutely blown away by that. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
That's a good question. Are you sleeping tonight? How's your child sleep?
No, but we haven't finished the story about the drama GCSE that your stepkids did.
Oh, no, that was it. Just that I think that was probably the most sort of cliche teenage thing of everyone in their school did these incredibly profound, incredibly serious, depressing topics, which I think mostly their lives hadn't been touched by. But also that kind of inward looking can extend to just, you know, not being great at washing up and stuff like that, which is the more traditional thing, you know, of like... But no, that I'm very lucky. They're both brilliant, and they really. So Marcus, before he asked me to marry him, he obviously didn't ask my dad because I'd have hated that and told him off for being patriarchal. He asked his kids for permission.
Asked his kids for permission.
Oh,
yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's nice.
And you know, they said they're really funny kids, and they said yes, crucially. But they said like, I think Alfie said something like, "Oh, you didn't need to worry. We're far too naive to realise how this will impact us in the future." Oh. And Em said, "Oh, my dad's all grown up."
Oh, bless.
That's nice.
So you didn't ask your dad. So did your dad walk you down the aisle, Rachel?
Yeah, he did actually. Which was quite a traditional gesture.
Because when you look at that, that is, they literally giving you away. It feels like sort of like they're taking their daughter to a market, don't they? Because that's what Lou was saying that about. But it's sort of a weird tradition, isn't it, that you're giving away. But it is nice, but it is
That's it, isn't it?
It's a nice tradition, but it is actually, if you look at it, like the same with asking for permission, it is a bit like, can I have her? Cheers, mate.
You're going to pass her on?
Yeah, drop her off, will you, Danny Isle? About Sunday, about 11.
Knock a tenner off.
Exactly. Oh, but that's nice you ask the kids, because you want, everyone's got to be on board, haven't they? Especially when there's a new sort of marriage on the cards. You don't want that drama at a wedding.
Well, that's it, yeah. Yeah, exactly. With the stepfamily, like, it's been really good for me. I was the youngest child yet, and I think that I kind of got my own way a fair bit when I was growing up. And I think being part of a blended family is very much kind of realising I really hate to even say these words, but it's not all about me.
Also two comedians marrying as well. There's a lot of who's it about.
That's been really hard to take. still learning that.
And so with the with your 14-month-year-old baby.
Oh, no, not year old, 14-month-old.
Oh, sorry, 14-month-old.
We do this all the time and everyone gets angry.
I've caught that of you.
Yeah, I know, it's spreading.
14-month-old.
And also, Josh, me and Rachel are interested in what you do with your pubic hair, which we'll like to find out either now
mainly,
or later on.
I shave it off and make collages of you.
Okay, that's lovely. Okay. I think I'll take that as a compliment.
Yeah.
But I want the serious answer as well at the end.
Okay,
I want
to
know what you're doing for your pubes. Sorry, okay, Rachel, cool. But we'll get that from
the
end.
We'll circle back to that.
We'll make sure we plug Ostentatious, your show that's on in London, and then we'll get back to Josh's pubes and it'll just finish perfectly.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
We've never had a plan of action before, have we?
Yeah, I mean, if you were writing an agenda for a podcast, that's what you'd want, isn't it? You'd want pubes, Jane Austen improv, the end.
Any other business, yeah.
So,
14-month-old.
Yeah. What was the question?
Sleeping? Was that the question?
Oh, that was the question. Blimey.
Oh,
this has been absolutely... These are the best ones when it goes all over the place. There's nothing worse than a linear interview.
Imagine if you just asked your questions and I went, yes.
Yeah. Do you enjoy having a child?
Yes.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, me too sometimes.
So you heard the episode then?
Yeah, so how's sleep going with a 14-month-old, Rachel?
Do you know what? It's mostly good. He's been a pretty good sleeper from, you know, that point where they sometimes are a few months in. So he sleeps through the night. He's been getting cold after cold after cold, so that wakes him up in the middle of the night occasionally. But he's good. He wakes up at about 6:30.
It's mad, isn't it, that's good.
Yeah, I mean that is mad. Like, I'm so used to getting up at 10 before that. It was obviously a big shock, but I think once you've been through that newborn stage of up every 2 hours, then you'll always forevermore appreciate just anything that is a solid block of 6 hours is absolute luxury.
Oh, 6 hours. If someone offered me 6 hours every night for the next 10 years, I'd take it now.
I've been on four and a half to 5 hours this week.
Have you?
And I feel really weird.
How old are yours?
Mine are 6 and 4. They're, it's not really been them. It's been my workload, really, because I've got loads of gigs booked in the evening, and we've been on this book promo. They make you get up really early and go to all the morning shows. So it's like I've been out all day. So I get in late and then up early.
Yeah.
And then sort of groggy in the day. But it's so doable because I'm just sort of used to it now. You just don't sleep that much.
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to really worry about like getting up for something, and now you're like, I still don't have to set my alarm if I'm on Lorraine.
Same. I still can't get over that like the concept of not having to set your alarm like for the foreseeable, but also like having a longer day for the rest of your life. You know, I was used to the day being from like 10 till 10 kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And now like from 6, it's just this extra few hours that you didn't have before. I mean, yes, you can't do anything with them. You're just looking after your baby. It's not like you can go frolicking and having incredible adventures. But, you know, it is just nice to have those extra hours in the day in a way.
And you was in, you had him in lockdown, sort of a weird sort of near the end version of lockdown, I imagine. And obviously Marcus has had two children before. How was it for him? Was he remembering stuff, or was he more experienced, or were you butting heads a bit because it's sort of like it was your first time but he's had kids before? How was that? Did it work all right, or was it frustrating?
I think that there were things that it did have a big impact that he'd had kids before, and that was a sort of relaxedness around a lot of the things that new parents would panic around and have so many questions. You know, I think it gave him a certain level of chill, particularly with regards to like just holding the baby and putting clothes on him and changing him. He instantly was just fine in terms of changing and bathing and practical things like that, which was great.
Yeah.
But also, you know, for me, like being worried about supporting every bit of their body and trying not to hurt their little arms when you put clothes on and being so delicate physically with them. I'm not saying you threw him around, but like,
but you do get into a point where you go, they're not going to break.
Yeah,
exactly. And he got there sooner because, you know, he's done it before.
I'll never get over the soft bit on the top of the head, though.
Oh,
I can't deal with that at all.
Oh, so pet, or like the support the neck.
Yeah.
As much changed in parenting, do you think, in the intervening 18 years?
Yes, I think it really has. He said it has. So just a lot of the general advice, and obviously every feeding story, every labour, every birth, all of that is different for everyone, so that's not something you can carry forward from last time. And the food has changed, you know, like what's advised has changed, and you do things at slightly different times, you know, because, you know, how long we would have had him sleeping in our bedroom isn't how long he might have before. And so I think there was a lot that was new.
But have you clashed over any of it, or was it quite seamless?
He wanted him, he was pushing more for him to stop sleeping in our bedroom before I was.
I was like,
what if in the middle of the, what if he needs us? And how will I know if he's all right? If I can't hear him breathing, I need to hear him breathing all the way through the night. And Marcus was like, I think it's very important that he moves into his own room.
And what point was that?
I think it was 6 months.
6 months.
Oh, that's about right, I think.
Yeah,
6 months.
Yeah.
That's about the your sort of normal time. You do feel a bit like, oh yeah, but I just need the amount. I used to just watch their chest going up and down.
Oh god,
for hours. Like, this is not helping anyone.
just go and check that they're not dead. Yeah. Just go and check they're not dead.
The whole time, it's awful, isn't it?
That's why you can never enjoy a longer nap. You know when you get a nap that's longer than it normally is?
Yeah.
The last bit of that, I'm just thinking, oh God, are they dead? So I can't enjoy the longer nap anyway. So I don't get the extra joy because you're like, he's been asleep for 3 hours now.
Yeah, it's horrible. Isn't it? And me and Lou have got stuff in the loft in case we have another baby, right, Rachel? Yeah. And
have you?
Well, no, but like...
That's a revelation.
No, not in case, but a bit like, well, let's... Or someone might need it or, you know...
It's in case you have another baby.
No, but you... Like, look,
you're having another baby.
No, we're not having another baby. But if... So what I'm trying to say is there anything that Mark has sort of brought out going, oh, I've got this from last time. That's his 20-year-old dusty cot.
Oh, God, I'm just trying to think now. Nothing major. I mean, there's some cute stuff like big sister's like still got some cuddly toys in her room. Aww. That he loves, so cute stuff like that. And there's still a few I think there were some baby books that he had, so yeah, the odd thing, but nothing major. We didn't have just like a cot in the utility room or anything.
But there's a cot in my loft that's not been slept in by a child for what would be nearly 3.5-4 years.
And what's the plan with it?
Don't know.
No.
Well, that's just quite heavy and it's in the loft. And...
If you moved house, do you think you'd take the cot?
The problem with the loft is you're never in there. When you're in the front room, you're like, oh, I'll get rid of that or move that on. Yeah. It's in the way.
Once it's in the loft.
Once it's in the loft, it might as well just be there forever.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that is true. I say that as someone who hasn't got one and would really like one for that exact reason, to never have to see that stuff.
Well, no, but yeah, but all that will happen is when you have to move again, you're just reminded of the stuff you should have thrown away.
Oh, yeah.
Haven't.
And when you move, you go, this is a great chance for me to reassess all my belongings. And then you go, I'll just fucking shove it in the loft.
So I've got a box of stuff from our flat before we moved into our house that I was supposed to unpack into the flat, but never did. Moved it to the house. I was ready to stick it straight in the loft. So it's not ever been unpacked in 2 moves.
Yeah.
I don't need that stuff.
What is it?
Don't know. but I've got 2 boxes of it.
Me and Marcus have, you know, like in every relationship, there's like key differences between you that sometimes lead to arguments. And they're the same arguments all the way through your relationship.
Yeah.
That's true,
definitely.
Right? That is true.
I'm really chilled and Rose is really uptight. That's the main issue.
Yeah. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
One of the things with me and Marcus is that I'm quite a give it away, clear out kind of person in terms of belongings. With the exception of greetings cards, of which I keep every single one ever.
Yeah, I do that. Why am I doing that? I'm never
going
to read
them.
Right,
in boxes. But he is... I think he would resent me using the word hoarder, but...
But you used it.
I have put it out there. So
so what's
very
he hoarding?
Emotional and sentimental, and pretty much everything he ever buys, even it's like a knick-knack from Christmas, like that is... It's still got like sentimental value to him. So we are considering maybe moving house at some point in the future. And we were talking about the process of like, oh, we'd have to like maybe put some stuff in storage to kind of get the house on the market, would we? And then I suppose if we did do that, that'd be a good chance to decide, you know, what to keep and what to give away. That'd be a good opportunity to go through and be like, oh, we haven't touched this for 3 years. Let's give it away. And he was just really quiet and was like, no, no, I don't think it would be a good time to do that. And I was like, well, it would, wouldn't it? Because, you know, we'd be literally going through all of our stuff, thinking about where it might go and whether it's going to come into our future with us. And he was like, no.
keep that.
I think we'll just keep it. Let's just take it all.
I think you need there needs to be like a proper guidelines though, because if it was, you know, like you said, like, oh, we've not touched that in a year, let's give it away. I mean, at the early stages, I would have had to give away my penis,
of course,
that was not touched for nearly 2 years, but I don't want to get rid of it just in case in the future it's got sentimental value. There's memories.
Josh
there.
Is like, you know what, we haven't touched this pube collage of Rob Becker's face for ages.
So is it your place together, or was it, did he already have the place and then you moved in? Because that's always a bit of a dynamic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a dynamic, good phrase. It was his place.
So it's difficult, isn't it, to sort of go get rid of that. But then when you do move to your place together, that is the opportunity.
Exactly. It's one of those things that, like, you know, moving is, it's more than just a change of house. It is exactly, it's
get
us for the first
shit.
Time choosing it together.
If you could pick one thing that you could just go click your fingers and it's gone, that he's hoarded? What's the one thing that haunts your dreams? Is there something?
Don't make me choose.
Well, you can pick three things. Also, I'm really enjoying this, Rachel. Normally, we ask this at the end of the episode about what frustrates them about their partner, but you voluntarily brought it up midway through.
But that's good because we got the pubes at the end of the episode,
and also you're ostentatious.
Oh, improv show. That's next. That's next.
Okay, he has got a lot of obscure cooking equipment, ranging from fondue sets to
slushy machines
sets and gadgets like that.
Popcorn maker.
He's got a spare kettle in the cupboard.
A spare kettle.
And I have three times I've been like, we don't need to keep a spare kettle, and he says he keeps it for touring, but he's never taken it on tour with him.
There's a kettle in every hotel and theatre.
I know.
No, that is not acceptable. Also, if your kettle does break, you can get one off the internet next day, or go to the shop, or just use a saucepan for the time being.
Yeah, in the meantime, use a saucepan. There we go.
The kettle. So the spare kettle. Spare kettle's extreme.
Can I just check, has he bought that as a spare kettle, or has he ended up...
No, I think it's like maybe his old kettle that he just didn't throw away.
Oh, so he's upgraded, but he's kept the old one as a backup. Yeah.
No, that is hoarding, that is. Because then happens if another kettle comes along?
Yeah. I know.
You get a free kettle, you go on a TV, you go on Sunday brunch, they give you a free kettle for some weird reason, you bring it home, you've got two reserve kettles.
You could have one upstairs.
I'll tell you what we are hoarding as well. Pointless trophies.
Pointless trophy.
Well, the actual pointless one or pointless ones?
The one that you get just for appearing on it on Pointless.
Oh, what? So you didn't even win?
You get a little glass trophy even if you don't win. And between us, I think we've got five.
Oh, so have you been on it five times between you?
Yeah.
I didn't know you could go on it again.
Yeah, you can, because Sarah Pascoe went on again without me after we'd won.
Yeah.
And then she didn't win. It was fucking great.
So you'd never go back on, Josh?
No, I'm quitting while I'm ahead.
So do you get the little one as well as the winner's one?
I've got the little... So it's like a
kind of... You
get the same one.
Right. Oh, dear.
Yeah.
Oh, that's not...
So Sue Pollard left with the same trophy as me, despite being absolutely dog shit at Pointless.
Yeah.
She's good fun, though.
Oh, don't worry about that, mate. She was a laugh.
She is a laugh.
But I tell you what, you have not known time go slowly till you've watched a producer attempt to explain the rules of Pointless to Sue Pollard.
So Sue, she's still doing gags. No. We're not filming this bit, Sue.
Come on, Sue. Just listen, Sue. It's the opposite of Family Fortunes. Come on.
Just pick something they wouldn't say.
Come on, Sue.
Oh my God, it is just the opposite of Family Fortunes. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time trying to explain it to people. That's what it is.
Yeah. We ask 100 people, what didn't they say?
Yeah.
So you've got five pointless trophies.
Yeah.
And then the thing is, in comedy, you do end up doing loads of weird stuff in your job.
Yeah, I bet you've got some House of Games trophies, haven't you, as well?
But then they look like self-portrait of Marcus. Because it's glasses.
Yeah, they do.
Wait, let me guess what other trophies you've got. Let me just guess what other trophies you've got. I think one of you will have got a Celebrity Mastermind trophy.
Yes. Yeah, well, we must have. He did win, but I don't know. We must have that.
What was his topic? Yeah.
Pink Floyd.
Oh, that's a good one.
That's quite a big one, isn't it? I don't know what other trophies you have. Those are the classics, aren't they?
Because you do end up getting weird stuff from your job, especially when you're travelling around the world doing different festivals.
Yeah. I'm just looking, like, literally next to me now, there's the sword from when he was in Spamalot in the West End.
It's on the wall.
A massive sword on the wall. And there's also an Alpine cowbell, which he won for a skiing race this year. So it is random shit from going round.
That's the hard aesthetic to build into your front room.
A sword and a cowbell?
Yeah. Yeah.
And five pointless trophies.
Five duplicate trophies from the same... Surely you could just give them away for a charity auction.
No, I don't think anyone wants them because they're £10 a penny.
Pointless fans.
No, but there's too many of them.
There's too many of them. Well, there's five in your house.
Yeah, there's too many in our house, yeah.
Well, I know this is a sore subject, Rob, but you know that there's a 6'7" gold Greg Davis that I got for winning Champions, which I gave to our agents.
Oh, yeah, where is it?
It's in their offices, but they're moving. So they phoned me on Friday and they were like, do you want The 6 foot.
Can I have it?
I'm auctioning it for charity.
For fuck's sake.
How much are you going to bid?
How much?
I don't know.
Tell me how much it's up to and I'll pay an extra quid.
Okay.
I tell you what, as a little gift for doing the show, Rachel, we're going to drop that round.
Oh, God. I would literally kill you.
Oh, God, it is difficult trying to chuck away other people's stuff when it's their flat to start with. But it's your flat now, Rachel. You've got to just take that on.
Yeah.
You've laid down roots, your marriage. You've got a kid. You can throw away the cowbell.
Don't get me wrong. Like, that's one of the things I quite like, actually. It's nice. It's musical. It's of aesthetic interest.
It's nice as an aesthetic to certain people, you know, blind war veterans.
Yeah.
In GCSE drama from Devon. You're doing Ostentatious, the improvised comedy Jane Austen. I mean, how do you explain it? Obviously, this is the greatest pun of all time, but can you explain Ostentatious?
It's a great way of selling it.
And will you be taking your boy on tour or with you or not when you're doing the shows?
Sadly, no. I took him on tour a bit when he was little. But now he's older, so like, as you know, like it disturbs them a little bit more. He still comes on the odd thing if we go like as a family and stuff.
It's not like a baby that can just be sort of rocked in the corner. He'll be tearing around, ripping it up.
Yeah, he'll be tearing around now, so it's a bit tricky.
You not thought about sticking a ruff on him and he could be a little character that bowls in?
Oh my God, so cute.
I'd fucking love that if I saw a little 14-month-old
dressed in Jane Austen outfit.
With a ruff on and screaming.
He's totally getting dressed up as Mr. Darcy, definitely. Whenever he's old enough to do World Book Day, which is something I've just heard about from parents. Oh,
it's the most overrated day of the year. It's so much pressure on it, Rachel.
I might send mine in as me and you for our book.
Ostentatious is happening. It's on tour at the moment. And then it's in the West End from November and December at the Arts Theatre, which is new for us, which will be nice.
That's nice. A wintry pre-Christmas West End run. That is a nice gig to be leaving the house for, isn't it?
It is, isn't it? We've been doing it for a few years now and we just love doing it. It does. It feels really Christmassy and cosy.
And the blurb here is an entirely improvised comedy play in the style of Jane Austen. Join the all-star cast as they create a righteously funny new literary masterpiece based on nothing more than a title suggested by the audience. No two shows are ever the same. Now, Rachel, I've got to be honest with you. We do stiff and loose on this show where Josh is a bit stiffer than me. I literally have nothing on. I don't know. You could come out as RoboCop and I'd go, I don't know where that's from in Jane Austen. So do you have to be a Jane Austen
fan? I'm across it. This is why our partnership works, Rachel. I am across Jane Austen.
I don't know Jane Austen.
Doesn't know Jane Austen.
You don't have to be across Jane Austen at all.
Right.
We have people who've never seen a single thing about her come and enjoy it. It's very silly and very funny and stupid. But if you are a Jane Austen fan, which a
few of us in the cast are, it's going to blow your fucking beans off.
Yeah, it's got like references and Easter eggs in there that you will enjoy.
Right.
But no, there's not a particular... You don't have to be a Jane Austen fan to enjoy it.
You've toddler age now, Rachel. Yeah. Are you maybe thinking about more or you're happy with the toddler? We know that you've spoken publicly about you had trouble, you know, with miscarriage and stuff like that in the past.
Yeah.
Are you in that awkward stage that Josh has written about in the book about that, you know, it's not just a, oh, let's try off another one. There's a sort of worry and pain there from what's happened before.
Yeah, we are. We're wondering that inevitably because your kid reaches that age, you know, where you're like thinking about it. And I just don't know. I don't know what's going to happen. I think that I've got possibly the more kind of biological urge for it. And I think Marcus is absolutely knackered. he's got three kids.
And a fucking sword.
And a sword.
A sword and a cowbell. He's got a lot going on.
You know, and he's a bit older than me, and I'm a geriatric mother as it is. So
what age? It's insanely low when they call you a geriatric mother, isn't it?
I think it's either over 35 or 37.
That's mad, isn't it?
And what's the age gap between you and Marcus?
10 years.
10 years. My mum and dad 10 years age gap.
Oh, they.
And he was a bit because my dad had. He was married before, 10 year age gap, and then so I've got like half brothers, but then my dad was. My dad's 78 and I'm only 36. My brother's 34, so he must have been in his 45 when he had my younger brother, his youngest child.
My dad was 50 when he had me.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Yeah. So this is probably why I'm sort of like fine with, and there's an age gap between him and my mum as well. So like, that's why I'm probably
she was
sort of
70,
fine
wasn't
with
she?
Like, that's right. Bang on.
Unbelievable
yeah.
story.
That really was a geriatric
fucking pumping them out at 70 and 50. Good on them.
The old toy boy dad.
When Marcus is like, oh, you know, I'm of an age kind of, and I'm like, no. Just don't accept that at all.
You're not. You're young enough to have more kids and get rid of that fucking cowbell. Rachel's in town.
Because well, I definitely think, like, because when we had a miscarriage between our two children, then the second pregnancy that we had was just tense. Do you know what I mean? It felt like the first one, I hadn't really comprehended that stuff could go wrong, if that makes sense. Mm. And so I think, from our perspective, I think that would be one of the things that would stop us if we were thinking about having a third, would be the thought of it happening again to us. Because,
yeah.
So I know this sounds weird. We're almost like, should we quit while we're ahead here? I don't know. That's just totally my own.
I have that feeling about Billy that we've even, you know, just got one child, but like he's so brilliant. And yeah. I do. And also having, you know, I've given birth to two babies and I've got one brilliant little boy. And I do have that feeling of like, I know what it is to know what you've got.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
and what you
yeah.
haven't. So there's definitely a huge amount of thinking to go into whether to have another one, because, and as well, you know, in a blended family as well, it's not just about whether you're willing to risk a loss and a trauma. It's about putting an entire family through that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot to think about.
It's a lot.
Which is why we just don't know.
Which is why we're going back to talk about pubic hair.
Right. Genuinely, I do want to know what you're doing, because I think you get a bit.
Oh, we all know. Oh, no, I wasn't actually steering it back.
No, I'm quite happy to. If you are, Rachel, unless you want to.
Yeah, fine.
Yeah, yeah, cool. So what's happening down there? Because I imagine you're very thickly haired.
No, I'm not very thickly haired.
Because you get hairy like nose and ears, don't you? A bit.
I do. I have to. To trim my eyebrows.
You're a bit of a sprout.
I have to trim my eyebrows.
Yeah, I know.
Feel how hard my eyebrows are.
Okay.
Hard.
You could light a match on that.
Yeah, they're like wire wool.
Yeah. So
are
what's
they?
That? So what is
yeah.
that? Is that what?
No,
is
but that's.
But it's not that downstairs.
That the trailer does not. The trailer of the eyebrows does not show what the film of the pubes
it
is.
Was yeah. it like spider silky? Like
no,
sort of silky
no.
It's spider
just, I'd say
stuff.
It's very average.
Could you comb it straight?
I'm not. I'm not across what other... No,
get yours out, I'll get mine out, we can find out. If you want to get across it, or whatever you call it, you pervert. So are you shaving downstairs?
No, I'm not shaving downstairs.
You're just completely leaving it?
But it's not that long.
So you,
the pubes, just to be clear. Oh, God. Oh, God.
I keep coming back to Rob's armpit hair being three or 4 inches long.
So that's that I've shaved a few weeks ago.
Oh, yeah, Rob's got a totally smooth armpit.
It's lovely.
Wow.
Nice. And also as well, the kids used to get babies used to clamp onto it.
What do you mean?
Well, like if I was topless holding a baby, that's why I'd shave my chest there, and then it pull the hair on your armpits and stuff. So does your child go to nursery?
Well, that definitely wasn't written down on a sheet, was it?
Here's a good one. Then how do you split the parenting with Marcus? What's the split? Because you're both busy and in the same jobs, where sometimes if you are in comedy and you've got a partner that works sort of 9 to 5, then it's a bit more obvious. But you're both out and about and antisocial hours. So how do you split it? And is it sort of done weekly?
Basically, we just share it about 50-50. But by 50-50, I mean, as you say, it varies week by week. At the moment, because I'm doing late night MASH, for the first time since Billy's been born, I've actually
That's really
got
time demanding.
It's hugely time demanding. Like, yeah, it's like proper kind of full time, but weird hours.
Weekly topical show on Dave, isn't it? So, but you're reacting off the news. So it's not like you're filming it.
Yeah, so you're writing like all Monday, Tuesday, recording Wednesday into Wednesday night.
And everyone keeps getting sacked. It's hard to keep up.
Yeah.
I thought you meant on Late Night MASH. I was like, well, Rob's giving some background.
Yeah, exactly. Like, so technically this is my lunch hour from writing today. So for the first time we've had a routine actually, So, like, I go to work, Marcus is looking after him. We have a part-time nanny now, which really helps take the pressure off, which we're very lucky to be able to have. But it's not, you know, it's not like full-time childcare. Mostly we pass in between the two of us, depending on what we're up to at the moment. So at the end of Late Night Mash, which is this coming week at Lend, then the there's a bit of a sea change. Marcus is suddenly doing a lot more touring and gigging, and I'll be at home more. It is a challenge to never quite know what the childcare situation is going to be that month. You know, you have to, like, really just the amount that I stare at my diary going,
That's what me and Lou find the most difficult. It's like, I never know where I'm going to be, and neither does Lou. So, like, I'll have stuff penciled, like Rob and Romesh filming day. And, and then, like, 3 days before, they go, oh, yeah, can I have your passport because you're going to India? I'm like, okay. So, yeah, Lou, I'm going to go to India for 5 days. is that all right? So just sort of let you know.
I couldn't
cope with that. And so, or it's just like, oh, yeah, I'm getting picked up at four to go to, like, Herefordshire to do ice skating. I'm like, oh, yeah, so I'll probably be back quite late, actually, because it's a five-hour drive, so... yeah, that's the hardest part if your job's a bit erratic, isn't it?
I tell you what is hard as well, though, between... in terms of, like, keeping good feelings in your relationship and doing childcare, is when your job is a lot of it is fun as well. Like, so what you're saying about, like, oh, sorry, I've got to go to work, which is going ice skating.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Absolutely exhausted after that. We had to go backwards.
Exactly. So then you're like, oh, you know, you're working and I'm doing childcare, and of course it's joyful looking after your child, but it is also hard work. And when our work, sometimes it feels like work, you know, when you're just going to, like, a sort of slightly crappy club in the middle of nowhere and it's 4 hour drive, and sometimes it feels like work, but sometimes it's like, oh, that is a sweet job.
Yeah.
We're all gonna have a really nice time.
We get that all the time because I literally is filmed and then Lou can see that I had fun.
Yeah.
So I can't even lie.
I was really putting it on screen.
I'm a great actor, Lou.
Yeah.
But this is it, like doing podcasts like this, and like the writer's room for MASH is just like really fun. And it is work, you know, it's hard work, but it is also incredibly enjoyable. So you feel like you're cheating to a certain extent.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Luckily, the last leg's an absolute pain in the arse.
He's hated it for years.
Hated it for years, mate.
The final two questions, Rachel, you sort of half answered it, but I think we can make this more about parenting rather than hoarding. What's the one thing that Marcus, your partner, does that really winds you up about parenting? And what's the one thing that he does that you go, oh, isn't he amazing? That's great.
This is a really small thing. Is that Mark, and I think this is true of hashtag not all men, but quite a lot of men, is Marcus is not very good at being quiet. And this was obviously more important when Billy was sleeping with us in the room. But, like, you know, you have to creep in so that you don't wake him up. Marcus is no good at creeping, and he's also not very good at whispering. He just isn't.
He can project, can't he?
Yeah, he's just not, I would say he's not a hugely, like, discreet person generally. And, like, now we always, before we go to bed, like, we creep into Billy's room to, like, you know, check on him. And he just sort of, like, opens the door in a normal way. Like, and I'm there, like, squeezing the door and turning it quietly, like, doing, you know, creeping into the room so we don't wake him up. And Marcus just barrels in, really.
Oh, that would do my head in.
And it does sometimes wake him up. And he denies that. He's always like, it's fine. And I'm like, why don't you just creep? So his inability to creep is...
That's a good one.
Yeah, that's one of my favourites, actually.
That's a strong answer.
Because it's really, you know, you really hit the nail on the head. But yeah, Lou calls me a bit of a boomer. They used to call me Bowser. Like Bowser from Mario?
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's bouncing in and stomping about. I'm bad for that.
Yeah, me too.
But maybe not all men, but probably most men.
Yeah, I'm a great creeper. No, I'm not. I'm heavy on the stairs.
You've got massive hairy hobbit feet.
I haven't got massive hairy hobbit
feet. You have. You're size 9. You're not tall enough to be size 9.
But it's a width.
Not in proportion.
It's the width. Anyway, it's neither here nor there.
It's the width. Sorry. And what's the one thing that Marcus does as a parent that you absolutely love, Rachel?
Well, you're going to hate this, but it's hard to pick because he's good at everything.
Aww.
He's really good. He's a really hands-on... natural dad. Like, he's just really, he's really enthusiastic. He just loves spending time with him, which can be very annoying as a parent. You're like, you're not even moaning about having to do it. He's just like finding it fine. But he just delights in him so much. Do you know what I mean? It's never a feeling of, I never feel any concern or like that he won't have a lovely time. Like, Marcus just delights in having him so much. And that's probably the best thing.
Oh, that's really nice, because it is horrible when you see friends that go, oh God, I've had to leave him with him or her for the day, and I just don't know if I can relax. Like, that'd be a horrible feeling they're not enjoying it. But oh, that's lovely. It's so sweet when you see that someone's just like, yeah, I'll go and take him off, go and do that. Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, he's cute. It's just little boys' club, little Billy
and he's
Daddy
such an enthusiastic person, so
he
you
is.
Can see that as a dad.
Yeah.
Oh, Rachel, it's been amazing. Thank you. And good luck with Ostentatious, the show.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Thanks, Rachel. That was
thank
amazing.
Thank you so much, Rachel.
Thanks for having me.